May it please the court. My name is Stanley Goff, attorney for appellant Morgan Sanders. The district court erred in holding that the appellant's no contest plea to a charge in Penal Code Section 148 was barred his excessive force claim under Heckman Humphrey. The court's reasoning for this holding was that because plaintiff stipulated to the fact that he was resisting arrest at the time that Kelly Bryan ordered the canine to bite, that he now cannot allege excessive force on the grounds that Bryan's ordering of the bite was unlawful. However, the district court completely failed to apply its Heck analysis regarding the subsequent use of excessive force, which was the repeated biting of the plaintiff, Bryan forcing the plaintiff's leg deeper into the canine's mouth after the plaintiff was no longer resisting and was laying on the ground and subdued by the other officer, which was also alleged in the operative complaint. Regarding the subsequent use of excessive force by Bryan, we feel that Hooper versus County of San Diego, which was held by this court, directly applies. The Heck bar does not apply to the appellant's claim, at least regarding the repeated biting by the canine, because his claim was directed at the unreasonable force used to effectuate his arrest once he was laying on the ground to surrender, and not at the lawful conduct of the appellant leading up to his physical apprehension.
Would you entertain a question?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I think in my mind, how we're going to handle Hooper and the other cases that we have is that in one lane of cases, the fight was over. A woman was already she was not doing anything. Here, if I understand the record correctly, although your client had two marshals on his shoulders, his legs were still free. They were moving and he was using them to his advantage and was advised that if he didn't stop, the dog would come on. Isn't that different from Hoover?
Well, that part is different from Hooper, Your Honor. However, we also allege in the operative complaint, which the district court never addressed, that after the plaintiff was no longer resisting, was in total surrender and totally subdued, that Bryan repeatedly forced the appellant's leg into the canine's mouth for the canine to continue to bite the plaintiff, bite the appellant. So that part, so in that context, it's just like Hoover, Your Honor.
Does the record show that he was completely submissive, that his leg was down without anybody holding him down, and that he was not struggling at the time the dog bit him?
Well, the operative complaint alleges two forms of excessive force. One was at the time that the canine was deployed. The other one was after he was already in full surrender, a repeated bite by the canine. That portion of the force that we allege in the operative complaint was never addressed by the district court in the total. And that's what we're bringing up now. The district court completely failed to apply the Heck analysis to that subsequent use of excessive force. And even in the district court's reasoning, they speak about, or they only speak to, the initial bite by the appellee regarding Bryan ordering the bite of the plaintiff. Excuse me, of the appellant, Your Honor, but not the subsequent repeated biting that we allege in the operative complaint.
So, Mr. Goff,
yes, Your Honor.
It seems that one of the critical issues here is the factual basis for your client's plea and then conviction for the 148. What was the factual basis for the plea? How should we determine that? And then how do we know it did or did not include subsequent bites, him continuing charges of subsequent bites?
Well, Your Honor, the record is clear that, and we concede this, that the appellant did, he stipulated to everything that was presented at the preliminary hearing. We don't contest that. We're only going by the record, which was that when the district court issued this ruling, the judge simply stated or presented that she was doing an analysis regarding the deployment of the canine to bite the appellant. She did not address or speak about the other allegations that were made in the operative complaint, which was the repeated biting of the canine of the plaintiff's leg with the officer, based on our allegations, forcing the appellant's leg into the dog's mouth deeper for the dog to get a deeper bite into his leg. That was never addressed.
What did Officer Bryan say about the dog bite in his testimony at the preliminary hearing?
he said that the appellant was kicking his legs around and that he ordered the dog to bite the appellant's leg until he was handcuffed. He said that once the appellant was handcuffed, he ordered the dog to stop biting. Okay. We're alleging that that's not what happened. We're alleging that after the plane was already handcuffed, already subdued, that he allowed for this canine to continue to bite the plaintiff's leg. This was inoperative complaint.
But you just said that you were stipulating that the factual basis was everything that was said at the preliminary hearing. So how do we reconcile, you agree to what they said at the preliminary hearing, but allege something different happened?
So we contend this, Your Honor, that even if this court ruled that Mr. Sanders was barred or heck barred from bringing his successive force claim all the way up to the point of the dog being deployed, and even maybe after the first 10 seconds of the dog biting, that's fine. However, subsequently, which is possible under Hooper, subsequently, Brian allowed for the dog to continue to bite appellant after he was already subdued, have been accessible.
And when did we decide he was subdued? Because you're saying Officer Brian said, I called the dog off after he was handcuffed. You're saying sometime between the time the first bite and handcuffing, he was subdued?
No,
or something else happened?
No, Your Honor, I'm saying that after he was subdued, meaning he was handcuffed, meaning he was already in detention, meaning he was no longer posing a threat, the dog continued to bite the appellant.
That's helpful. So your allegation is that the dog bit him after he was handcuffed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Is that correct? I was reading your complaint. It suggests that there's only one dog bite, right?
No. Excuse me, Your Honor. The complaint, and if the complaint is not fully clear to the court, then I apologize for that, for not making it more clear. The dog was deployed to bite the appellant. However, we're also alleging that after the appellant was already on the ground, the dog had already bit him already. He's already subdued. He's already detained fully. That Brian allowed for the dog to continue to bite the appellant, even forcing the appellant's leg deeper into the dog's mouth.
But are you suggesting that there was two dog bites or just one continuous dog bite?
Your Honor, we didn't allege there was two dog bites. We just alleged that it was force used, and that's, we could say the duration of the force turned into excessive. Or we could say that the manner in which the force was used, first it was lawful, and then it evolved to being unlawful because now the appellant is no longer resisting. He's totally subdued, and the canine is allowed to continue to bite the appellant even after he's in this position.
So at some point you want us to separate the dog bite. I guess you're alleging that at some point the dog bite went from lawful to excessive.
I can concede that. Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
And how are we supposed to know when that change happened? I don't know if I see it in your complaint.
Well, I try to make it as clear as possible in the complaint. However, I take responsibility if it's not that clear. And that's the other part of this argument, that at this stage of the pleadings, which was a 12B motion, Your Honor, the judge could have allowed for us to have leave to amend to make those facts more clear. If the facts were there, she could have granted us leave to amend. And we could have amended it and made it even more clear for the court to see that we were speaking about, in addition to the deployment of the dog bite, because we did make that argument as well, but we also made the argument that it was subsequent repeated biting by the dog after the plaintiff was already subdued. That was also excessive force.
So, Mr. Goff, unless the other judges have more questions, you have about a minute left. Did you want to reserve your time?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve my time.
Okay.
Thank you.
And let's see. We have Mr. Blackman and Mr. Allen. Mr. Blackman, you are going to take 8 minutes. Mr. Allen's going to take 2. Mr. Blackman, were you going to go first?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Please proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Noah Blackman. I am counsel for the appellees in this case, the City of Pittsburgh and the canine officer, Officer Brian. Judge Kim of the district court got it right. This is a clear-cut case where heck bars this excessive force, these excessive force allegations. The court should affirm the dismissal. If this court were to allow Mr. Goff and his client to argue that this canine bite was excessive force, that would clearly undermine, in fact, it would be a collateral attack to the underlying Penal Code Section 148 conviction, and it would invalidate that conviction. Judge Wallace is correct that the record of the preliminary hearing essentially is what forms the factual basis for the plea. That's what controls. The fight was not over, so to speak, like Judge Wallace said, until after the canine was deployed and the dog was on the bike for a period of time until he was in handcuffs. That's the undisputed testimony in the record. That's the testimony that Mr. Sanders accepted and stipulated to as part of his plea.
So, Mr. Blackman, you would agree that even with a conviction under Section 148 for resisting arrest, there could be a point when the officers were acting lawfully, but then a point when they're using excessive force. And if they're using excessive force, that is not lawful, and that would be outside of the elements of the 148 conviction. So given that at some point there could have been excessive force, and that would not be heck barred, how do we decide if that happened? How do we view this event in segments or as a continuity or as a one event? And how do we view this to decide at what point was there excessive force, or at least is there an allegation?
Your Honor, potential excessive force subsequent to the behavior that formed the basis of a resisting arrest charge. But we don't have that here because we do have a very clear record. If the court looks at the critical pages of the supplemental excerpts of record, we had to do all the supplemental excerpts because the record was unclear by what Mr. Goff provided. But there's critical pages, SER 148 to 150, 169, as well as 174 to 176. And more critical to your Honor's question, even during cross-examination at the preliminary hearing, and I'm at SER 169, the criminal defense attorney was going into the lawfulness of the canine bite and in cross-examination and asked the officer, you know, when did the bite stop, essentially? And the answer was it was on the bike for the exact amount of time it took to place Mr. Sanders in handcuffs. He estimated 20 to 30 seconds, but obviously there was a body camera that was going to control as well. So the point is that based upon the record, Officer Brian, as well as the Antioch officers, acted lawfully. That's what the plea basically acknowledged throughout the entirety. So he was acting lawfully at the time he deployed the canine and at the time basically Mr. Sanders was eventually placed in handcuffs.
So you said there was a body camera. Is there footage from that camera that shows the event and could tell us what happened?
That was part of the criminal record. That's not part of the record here on appeal, but that was part of the criminal record that was played, that criminal defense attorney had a chance to cross-examine.
But was it before the district court in this case?
I'm not sure offhand, actually. I don't believe it was. I don't believe it was part of that. Your Honor, the plaintiff is now trying to basically manufacture and dissect this factual record. But what's important that is that in the criminal case, that's the time when Mr. Sanders needed to try to qualify or limit his plea. He never did that in the plea. He basically accepted the entire preliminary transcript and the record, which for the purposes of this appeal relates to Officer Brian's testimony about resistance the entire time, even through the deployment up until the time he's handcuffed. Mr. Goff is not allowed to now slice and dice the record and change the record by arguing that after he was handcuffed, which is certainly not in the complaint, that he was bit once or twice. Hypothetically, even assuming that that was the record at the preliminary hearing, that would be excessive force. And therefore, Mr. Sanders could not be convicted of Penal Code Section 148 if the officer was acting unlawful during that. So basically, his plea acts as a acceptance that Officer Bryan and the Antioch officers were acting lawful throughout the entire event.
So to agree with you, we have to accept your characterization of the factual basis for the plea. And I think it's beyond dispute that the discussion of the factual basis was not very detailed or lengthy. The court asked Mr. Sanders' counsel if there was a factual basis for the plea. I believe his counsel stated, based on the preliminary hearing transcript. That's the extent of it. There's no detail. There's no, you know, nothing else. But somewhere in that transcript, there's a factual basis for the plea. So you're saying we should interpret that as everything in the transcript, as opposed to the parts of the transcript that could be separated from parts where there's an allegation of excessive. Is that correct? Is that a fair summary?
That's fair, Your Honor. But there's nowhere in the preliminary hearing transcript, and we're really talking about Officer Bryan's testimony. He was the only witness on that point. The other witnesses related to other crimes. There's nothing in the preliminary hearing transcript that indicates any excessive force or any use of the dog after the handcuffs. So,
but what's important from the transcript is how it shows resisting arrest. So he was fleeing in a vehicle. They tried to stop him. He didn't stop. That's resisting. He fled on foot. That's resisting. And then he was in a scuffle with the officers and was charged with resisting there as well. So there seem to be multiple ways that he could have been convicted for resisting that could be separate from any excessive force. So how do we slice up this transcript, or do we need to, or do we decide that this transcript covers everything?
I appreciate that, Judge Beatty. You know, you can't slice it up, because basically when the plea was accepted based upon that transcript, the plaintiff has accepted that he was resisting arrest at the time the dog was deployed, and at the time all the way up and through handcuffing. He cannot now get up and argue against that. His opportunity, which he did not take at the criminal trial, was to try to, at the time of the plea, to limit his plea to, like Your Honor said, fleeing in the car or fleeing on foot. They never took that opportunity. This was raised specifically in the Winder case, which I think is very on point with this case, 2018 Eastern District. The court said that there was no exception or reservation by the criminal defendant regarding the preliminary hearing, so all the officer's behavior was lawful. Winder did not limit the agreement to only portions of the transcript, provide a separate factual basis, or in any other manner suggest the trial judge should not rely upon a particular portion of the transcript in finding a factual basis. The same thing happened in Beats, which is a Ninth Circuit case, where the jury basically determined.
So, Mr. Blackman, we're well aware of those cases, so reading them to us isn't helpful. Plus, you're into your co-counsel's time. Did you want to allow Mr. Allen some time?
Yes, that's fine. Thank you. I'm submitted. Thank you.
Mr. Allen, you're muted.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, Kevin Allen, on behalf of appellees, and young officers Hulleman and Hopwood. I echo what Mr. Blackman said. I add only this. The only allegations against my clients were an integral participation claim and a failure to intervene claim on the excessive force. If there is no excessive force claim, the violence is barred by Heck. Therefore, there is no grounds to sue either of my clients, and they should be dismissed on those grounds as well. That's it. Submitted, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. All right, Mr. Blackman, there's 20 seconds left. Actually, the clock is reset. So,
yes.
Mr. Goff, you've only got a minute, but we took up some of your time with questions, so I'll give you the 2 minutes you asked for.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. So just to address Webb and McMahon, those two cases are distinguishable. First and foremost, they're not binding on the district court. They weren't, and they're definitely not binding on this court. However, they're distinguishable because in both of those cases, the plaintiffs alleged in their complaints and in their declarations that they did not resist or engage in any resistance, which would have invalidated their no contest pleas. here the appellant
counsel, is counsel, I have a question. The argument you raised on your opening is a little different than what you raised in your brief, isn't it? Because as I understand your argument in briefing is that it was the flee, the foot chase and the car chase that could have been the basis of the resisting arrest, not this argument that you're making now that the dog bite somehow transformed from reasonable to excessive at some point. Do you agree with that?
Well, I respectfully disagree. We're making both arguments, Your Honor. In the appellant brief, if you look at it, they're both of these arguments are being made. And I was going to address the second argument, which is what Judge Beatty presented, which was that there are the record is very unclear as to in what part that my client resisted. He resisted on at least three different occasions. And the record in which he pled guilty to does not specify which one of those incidents that he could have pled guilty to 148-4.
So if he were charged, if there were going to be another resisting charge, wouldn't he claim that his plea covered everything that happened in the incident? So in other words, he would get the benefit of all of the claims, potential resisting claims being extinguished by his plea. And do you agree with that?
Yes, I agree with that, Your Honor. That's typical exercise in the criminal court. However, for purposes of a lawsuit, and it has been cases in the Ninth Circuit that have addressed this, it's not clear as to what part or what actions that my client engaged in that he pled guilty to Penal Code Section 148 for. There was at least three incidents, and this is aligned with Smith v. Hammond. It's not clear. And for the court now, or for the district court to use the incident in which the client was on the ground and the canine was deployed and say that was the part that could be used, that's the appellee's cherry picking or slicing and dicing what fits them. It's not us.
Okay. So we're over time now. Unless my colleagues have any additional questions, we'll submit the case. And counsel, thank you all for your argument this morning.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honors.